and not because she hadn't come to trust and care for her hosts. Far from it. You hesitate. Does that particular point of truth matter? Catti Bree asked.
It does, Dowell said with unexpected and jarring seriousness.
Kipper has detected some unwanted magic aimed at the Ivy Mansion, Penelope explained. Detection spells, divination, distance vision. Someone seeks something here, or someone. Catti Bree closed her eyes and took another steadying breath. Even though the years had turned, she knew in her heart that it had to be Lady Avelier.
So will you tell us the truth? Dowell asked.
No, Catti Bree answered without hesitation. For our own sake, Penelope asked, and Catti Bree nodded. You are being hunted by a powerful adversary, then, said Kipper, and he nodded when Catti Bree looked to him. Good that you are here, then. You are among powerful friends. No, Catti Bree replied, again without having to even think about it. Good for me, perhaps, but not so for you. We are formidable. It matters not, said Catti Bree. She was thinking beyond the walls of the Ivy Mansion. If Avelier was hunting her, the woman and her Netherese cohorts wouldn't move on the Ivy Mansion. They would watch, and they would learn, and they would have a hot trail to follow when Catti Bree at last departed. I am not in danger, Catti Bree explained. Nor are you in having me here. But it is best that I take my leave, for now at least. I had never meant to so detour from my journey, though I would not trade the last years. The generosity of the Harples exceeds even the eccentricities of the Harples, and that is no small thing. You have a great tale to tell, Penelope argued. Of Harkle and Bitterdew and Mithril Hall and Delly Curty, I wish to hear a tale for another day, Catti Bree interrupted. And that is my promise. I shall return to Longsaddle one day and repay all of your generosity with tales that will make you smile. I know that is meager payment for the training you have offered.
It was an arrangement of mutual benefit, Dowell said. Your unique skills with the old ways served us as well as we served you.
It is generous of you to say so, said Catti Bree. Then I am free to leave? Of course, said Penelope. Ever so. But we would prefer that you remain. I will return, Catti Bree said, looking her in the eye, meaning every word. But may I indulge one more favor? She looked to Kipper, the most skilled of the bunch. Magical transport. The old man raised a bushy eyebrow. In secrecy, Catti Bree added. I will tell you alone my destination, and you will divulge it to no one, not even your Harple colleagues, on your word. And we do not even know your name, Penelope remarked. Catti Bree turned to her and shrugged, then wrapped her in a warm hug. After gathering up items for the road and doing a bit of research on the current geography of the region west of Longsaddle, Catti Bree settled on a location that seemed as if it would prove hospitable enough and within reach of her ultimate goal. She would not bid Kipper to put her down in Icewind Dale, for she did not want him or anyone else to know her final destination. She stepped out of the old mage's portal onto a mountain pass overlooking a small town nestled in the westernmost reaches of the spine of the world, a town called Orkney, that traced its line of lords back to days before the spell plague. And so, in the line of Meralda and Coulson, the little girl Wulfgar had taken in as his own child for a short period of time, in days long past. Chapter 25. Fidelity. The Year of the Tasked Weasel, 1483 D.R. Gontalgrim.
With all the stubbornness of a dwarf, Brunner ignored the reaching monsters and fought against the press of the boot, driving himself with every ounce of his strength toward the many notched axe. If he could just get his hand around it. But he could not. And he let out a little grunt as the boot crushed down harder, pressing him with supernatural strength, grinding his arm into the stone. Clawed hands tore at his clothing and skin, and the otherworldly shrieks of hungry, undead dark elves echoed off the cavern walls.
"Get ye back!" Brunner heard.
And the gruff voice and accent gave him pause. The hands stopped clawing at him then, but the boot held him fast. He managed to turn enough to get a glimpse of his captor, and he gasped in shock, and was too numb from that shock to resist as a thick hand reached down and grabbed him by the collar and hoisted him roughly and so very easily to his feet.
"You're breathing still only because you're a dwarf thief, but know that you're not long to be breathing,"
the vampire, an undead dwarf in ridged armor, said.
"I'm wanting you to know the grave you're robbing afore I break your neck."
"The cairn of King Brunner." Brunner breathed, and he added, his voice thin from absolute shock. "Puent." The vampire gave him a quick shake, so roughly that it rattled his bones.
"What'd you call me?"
"Puent. Oh, me Puent. What have ye become, then?" The vampire dwarf, Thibbledorf Puent, stared hard at this young dwarf, looking him up and down, then settling on his eyes. They locked gazes and stared silently through many heartbeats, heartbeats from Brunner, and not from the dead battle rager.
"Me king?"
Thibbledorf Puent asked. He let go of Brunner's collar then, his hand visibly trembling as he retracted it.
"Me king?"
All around, the drow vampires hissed and shuffled uneasily, clearly wanting to leap back in at the living dwarf and tear him apart.
"Bah, get ye gone!"
Puent demanded, shouting at them and waving his arm menacingly. The group retreated into the darkness, falling back, hissing in protest, and soon falling on Brunner's three companions to feast on their still warm blood.
"What are ye doing?"
Brunner asked incredulously, looking around in obvious horror.
"Puent."
"What?"
"Ye died pulling the lever,"
Puent replied. And there seemed to Brunner to be a bit of resentment in his tone.
"Meself did na'.